Cup Brasa.
That's our intro.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bioscope Brasa. This is the show where we talk about movies, movie news, movie shorts.
Which are still trailers.
They
are always trailers.
Do you know why they call them trailers, though?
No.
Because they used to be shown after the movie.
Oh, because yeah. They trail the film.
Exactly.
That's fantastic.
No, bro, I am on fire today. So that's why they call them trailers, but we call them shorts. Because
it's a shortened version of a film.
Yeah. The show. Oh, shit. Yeah. We're still introducing ourselves. Yeah. My name is Ross.
And I'm Jody.
That's right. The show is divided into two segments. First is movie news and shorts, where we talk about movie news and shorts, and then we do a review. And this review is a doozy.
It's a massive review. What's the big word for a review?
Can you hear me sighing?
It's a revoir.
A revoir grande. A massive review. I mean, we watched 5 films, and it was for you.
For you guys.
We did it for you. We did it for the fans. We did it for everyone who owns a piece of Bioscope Brasa, I feel.
We did it for our Brasa.
That's right. We did it for our Brasa. And if that's not a noble reason, then I don't know what is.
It's the last time we do a poll. No more sagas. Ever.
Next week, we'll be doing Harry Potter.
Fuck that.
No. I kid. I won't put Jody through that. Ooh. Listen, yeah, go.
Where news and shorts
trailer for this week. We're only doing one.
Yeah,
it's a good one though, and it's gonna get us really into the Christmas spirit. It's called Happiest Season.
Okay,
stars Kristen Stewart, Mackenzie Davis, Dan Levy, who we all love from Schitt's Creek, obviously, Alison Brie, and Aubrey Plaza. Directed by Clea DuVall, who's actually much more famous for acting. She starred in a bunch of films like The Faculty. Quite a few things in the 90s and early 2000s.
You know, the one thing I remember from The Faculty is just that they pulled the guillotine, the blade of the guillotine. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to do that. Yeah. That's cool.
But that thing was like smoking.
That's pretty cool.
You're going to bludgeon.
It's a baseball bat.
You're going to bludgeon.
Anyway,
gonna
sorry. Carry on.
No problem. So, Happiest Season follows happy couple Abby and Harper as the holidays approach. Abby wants to propose to Harper at Harper's family's Christmas dinner, but she soon learns of a major issue. Harper hasn't come out to her family. So Abby is played by Kristen Stewart, and Harper is played by Mackenzie Davis. They play a lesbian couple, but Harper's family doesn't know that she's a lesbian.
Yeah, I mean...
Hijinks ensue.
This is... I really love rom-coms, so I feel like we in dire need of a good one.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, there's certain genres, like, you know, they come and go, and there's ebb and flow. Westerns for the most part were dead until the resurgence. So I feel like rom-coms are going to make a comeback. Well, good rom-coms are going to make a comeback.
Yeah, and streaming seems to have given us like a huge platform. For
you
some
know
really
why,
cool
though?
Rom-coms.
Because people watch for less on streaming services. Yeah. If they list for a comedy, and most people list for comedies for most part.
Exactly.
So they list for a comedy and they put a comedy on, that's what I do.
And it's that time of year where we start getting into
lonely,
like Christmas
depressed,
vibes
and
stuff.
Yeah.
I'm talking about positive. We were not on the same wavelength.
No, we were not bold, though. Most suicides occur during the New Year's. Fun fact. Yeah. Talk to someone. Okay.
Get help.
Bioscope Brasa.
That's the happiest season. Yeah, we're totally messing up this title.
My bad, I'm sorry.
God, it's called Happiest Season. This trailer looks really cool.
It looks so funny, man.
Everyone seems hilarious. I think
Dan Levy
steals the show.
100%.
With a couple of one-liners.
I don't even care if it appears that, like, he's playing the same character as Schitt's Creek, because it's just so good.
It feels like that's him.
Yeah, that is him.
He's playing himself in everything, and he is just... He's amazing.
Yeah.
Kristen Stewart, who I think is really... Her career's on a positive trajectory. Mm. She's starting some quite diverse things now.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool. This looks like another really different character for
Chloe. I think also, though, in of late, she's been trying to get into, like, mainstream.
Mm.
You know, Charlie's Angels was a wah-wah.
Supposed to be mainstream.
Yeah, but this could be that vehicle, you know what I mean?
I'm excited for it. I'm keen to see this as soon as it drops. Yeah.
It'll be liquor. Christmas fun.
Always.
For the whole family. No, this isn't for the whole family, is it?
There's some kids in this movie, so...
There's children.
There's kids in it, the kids can watch it, bro.
There's children in R-rated movies all the time.
Yeah, but if there's kids in it, they can watch it. I'm pretty sure that was my parents' part, though.
Children of the Corn. There's children in that movie.
Yeah, you watched it when you were out.
I did. It's another horror movie that fucked me up.
Case in
yes, anyway.
You were in that stuff. No, you're a scarecrow now.
It made me scared of white children.
Yes, man.
creepy. Jesus. Let's get... into the news. So, our first bit of news this week. For some reason, they are making a Bloodshot 2.
I've got a theory about this one.
Let's hear it, bro.
You know, Bloodshot was shot in Cape Town.
Right? Yes, that's right. It's just
we have some South African actors in there, lots of local stars. Cyril, bro. Cyril's like, he's using that COVID money. He's like, he needs
by any means necessary. Media. And he's like, hello, Ben. Listen. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
That's the only way this movie could get the sequel.
It was so bad, man.
I mean, you a follower of the comic, right?
Not hectically, but I've dabbled with Bloodshot. Mm. And first of all, Bloodshot has hair in the comics. I don't know why the fuck they chose Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel has hair?
And his armpits, maybe.
No, he's smooth like a baby.
See, that's true.
Everywhere.
Smooth Diesel. Uh-huh. Smooth, glistening, shiny Diesel.
There's no Krilla on that chest. And he takes off as like smooth.
Oh my god. Why do we care about fucking Vin Diesel? He seems like such a douchebag. Mm. I mean, he could possibly not be because he's all about family, but...
Yeah. Salud, familia. Yeah.
But is he a producer? Does he have some sort of major stake in
that? I assume so. Because with most of the films he's gotten into lately, he produces. All the Fast movies since Part 4 onwards, I think.
Yeah.
He's produced or played a production role. So I'm assuming he's involved with this. I think this is a character he's wanted to play.
That's my issue with it. So this is from Valiant Comics, and they have such cool characters and cool stories, but they have no like cinematic universe.
Mm.
And the problem is that they launched with this one.
Yeah, and somehow I'll continue.
Do you think it made that much money?
Remember, this was one of the first films to do the video on demand thing.
Yeah.
It was going to release mainstream at theaters.
Yeah.
COVID hit, and they were the first one that I know of that did the immediate switch to video on demand and released worldwide in that format. So it must have made some money, I think, out of people's desperation for new content.
Yeah, that's true. Because
there wasn't anything
going on. We were starved at that point.
Desperate times, bro.
Desperate times calls for Vin Diesel. Constantine 2, announced by Peter Stormare.
Do people know who Peter Stormare is?
No, tell them, Jody.
Peter Stormare is that weird guy who... He always plays either a German or a Russian or some European bad guy.
Mm.
So he's been in things like Bad Boys 2. He's the guy who goes to the Cuban guy's house and shoots it up.
Mm.
He's in John Wick 2. He's the brother of the villain from the first John Wick film. And also the devil in the original Constantine.
That was one of my favorites. Yeah. He's such a dope character.
Best devil.
Yeah. So, devil. I mean, he's not like super handsome, but he's so charismatic. Yeah. And
that accent is so weird. It's fluid. It just works for like
everything. What is he?
He's Swedish. No shit, he's Swedish. And
that is insane. I would never, because you're right, he plays a Russian more often than not. But I didn't even know he was fucking Swedish.
Yeah. So he somehow announced this before everyone else did.
Okay.
And it's like on his Instagram, he's saying that.
But is Keanu back?
Well, the only confirmation we have so far is Peter Stormare.
Yeah, so that's concrete. Keanu's back.
Let's hope so.
Confirmed.
Look, the original Constantine, even though it wasn't true to the character, it's one of my guilty pleasures.
I really love that movie. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a cross-shaped shotgun. Mm-hmm. The whole the world building was dope.
The kill Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. He kind of deserved that.
Exactly. That's why I like
He was not equipped to deal with that.
No.
Midnight, Jomon Hunsu. Yeah, such a cool character. So I really like that movie. I hope we see all of them again.
Yes.
In that world. It was fucking dope.
Fingers crossed, man.
Fingers all the way cross. Mm. Oh, you're supposed to cross like a Christian crossing. Yeah, man. Jody, you fucked up.
I did the twisty crosses.
I wish we had a camera right now. God, I would win. Anyway. Lethal Weapon 5 is happening. Confirmed by Mel Gibson.
So weird.
It doesn't matter that it's weird. I fucking love Lethal Weapon.
My favorite thing about this is that apparently 90-year-old Richard Donner is coming back.
He's
90 years old. The director of the Lethal Weapon films is involved with this movie.
So he can't pull a Matrix rap party. That motherfucker.
No. He's high risk.
I'm very high risk.
He's going to have to get permission to be on set.
But I love the Lethal Weapon franchise. I mean, I've been watching it since the 90s. That saxophone, the hair, the cutting of the hair.
Best South African accent ever. Ever. In a movie. Diplomatic immunity. Diplomatic immunity. Most accurate South African accent.
Oh, my word.
Ever
that, yeah, if you haven't seen, that's in
part two.
Two. Yeah, if you haven't seen Lethal Weapon 2. Mm-hmm. There are South Africans in there. They're dealing Kruger hands, apparently. Yeah. And they are apartheid-era racist South Africans. It's cock funny.
It's amazing. And Danny Glover also does a whole supporting the ANC thing. Yeah. And gets himself like arrested for some shit. It's like Free Mandela.
Oh, well, they were so fucking topical. Anyway.
Do you think that he's up for it, though?
Danny Glover? I don't know. Did you notice his lisp?
No.
He's got a lisp now. Watch
he
any
didn't
recent,
have
it. He didn't have it before. No. Watch any recent movie of Danny Glover and he's got...
He's got like tiny what I can follow.
Yeah, okay, you're right. But I think he... To be fair, I think he did do something to his teeth.
He must have, because he didn't have a lisp in the past.
He had a lisp. Watch any one of his latest movies. Just listen. Anyway, I hope everyone's back. They must bring back Rene Russo, Danny Glover, Chris Rock.
They've got to get Leo Getz.
Oh, I don't know. Joe Pesci look old as fuck.
I know,
in the
but
Irishman.
Leo Getz.
Yeah, Leo Getz. Okay. Okay, if you haven't seen it, you have no context for what you just did.
Go and watch the bloody movies.
But I hope they get them all back. Because I remember the last Lethal Weapon 4, it was a dope send-off. I mean... I don't even know if it was the best film, but it was a nice end of everyone was there. It was it was a nice conclusion.
And so, that Jet Li. So
Jet fucking Li. He's still alive.
Yes, man.
I am super excited for this, and I hope Mel Gibson can just keep his anti-Semitism on lock.
Just till the movie's done.
Just till it's done. Just till that rap. Yeah, please, man. Till that rap party. Okay, this bit of news is kind of bananas. You sent this to me last night.
It's the weirdest thing that I've
seen
in a while.
It's so odd. Anyway, Spike Lee is going to direct a musical about the origin of Viagra.
Music and Viagra goes together like a awesome carriage, bro. What else are you going to use?
I mean, it
you?
Is the literal basis for R&B.
Yeah, I saw this. You and I have been talking about Spike Lee randomly. And it's like the universe is like, hey, here's a little Spike Lee news
Spike
for you.
Spike Lee, I thought he was just watching NBA games. He's been busy. Busy getting busy.
Yeah, man. You think he's a method director?
100%.
He's like popping the
I mean, he's so, his penis is always out throughout the shoot.
So it's the Michael Bay style.
So we're going to make a movie or what? No. I hope Spike Lee's dick is not. This is a very strange project.
It's so weird. I mean, I don't know how the story... I mean, you know some background, some real background.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that Viagra wasn't actually developed for, you know, erectile dysfunction. Mm. They developed it for hypertension, blood pressure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then they turned it... During the trials, they realized that...
We're pumping all the blood to our
A side effect was like a raging boner. Uh-huh. And I mean, if you think about it, just from a marketing perspective, it is easier to sell an erection than blood pressure because that's what more men care about erections than they do blood pressure.
Yeah.
The next big thing is hair loss. That's the two main issues with men.
Mm-hmm.
making your dick work and making your hair grow.
I would have thought it's diabetes.
No. Diabetes.
Don't you have psychosis?
No, more like diabetes this dick.
Oh, trademark pending.
So, I mean, they're going to write songs about that. Uh-huh. We made a drug for hypertension. Oh, look at that. It's a reflection. I don't know. I'm not a musical.
You should pipe on that shit as well. No, Spike, though, I feel like he's going to just... Does he do a lot of original music?
I don't know. I know music is a big part of his films, yeah. But that's like more from the urban,
That's what I was thinking.
Black experience type stuff. But this, I mean, Viagra, this sounds like a white man's problem.
So Spike Lee's a great choice.
Obviously.
Look, just Spike Lee and musical.
Yeah.
I don't know how the two...
Maybe it's a hip opera.
Maybe.
Like Hamilton.
Yeah.
Have you seen Hamilton?
Get Lin-Manuel Miranda right in there, man.
I'm
friends with him as well. He's a big fan of the show.
Sec, it's time for a review.
We did a Revoir Grande.
Revoir Grande.
Yo, never again am I going to have.
No, let's do this again.
Let's do it on a weekly basis. Let's watch 5 films for review every week.
But it's not only, I'm just not that. It's the quality of the data.
Before we get there.
Yeah, it's done.
So, this week's review was The Twilight Saga.
Saga.
Not any one film in particular.
No.
The Saga.
Was a special request.
Special request by our loyal fans. We made this democratic. We put the vote out there and we followed through, y'all.
No, but look, we kind of burned ourselves. We put it in as a wild card, to be honest. I didn't think that people would wish so much suffering on us. No.
I thought, be so spiteful.
Yeah, my faith in humanity is now gone.
Gone. I'm done. This is how, like I told the people in the group, this is how brat-tatorships are born.
Yeah.
From now on, we will make our own choices.
Yeah.
We'll just live with
never
them.
Never again.
Whew. Anyway, the saga consists of Twilight, the first one, New Moon, Eclipse, Breaking Dawn Part 1 and Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Nice.
And this is all based on the young adult novel by Stephanie Meyer.
Meyer.
It's American, right? Whew. So, what we'll do in terms of the review is just touch on each movie briefly, we think, and then do a more overall bit afterwards where we talk about the saga.
I guess.
We'll see.
Yeah,
see how this goes.
Pretty loosey-goosey at this point. And so, watching them back-to-back, they all kind of do meld together in my memory.
Yeah.
So, I might get some things wrong. Just a heads up in terms of referencing the correct film. But who knows? Let's start this journey. Let's see where we end up.
Also, we are not giving any spoiler warnings. They are going to be spoilers throughout. This is an old saga.
Listen, fuck. If you haven't seen this, you know, then... Okay, I haven't seen it.
We didn't see it until now. We're talking to ourselves
anyway.
A week ago. Anywho. So, the saga basically has the same stars throughout all of the movies.
Yeah.
The main ones obviously being Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner, and then Anna Kendrick, who was since gone.
I did not know she was in there.
Me neither, but she's gone on to like some big things now, like Pitch Perfect movies, etc.
Yeah.
She was also in this movie.
I fucking
as, like,
hated again.
Nerdy best friend. Anywho. These films have different directors also, but let's start off with part one. Twilight, directed by Catherine Hardwicke. And I'm going to name the cinematographer in this film because name and shame. The cinematography was terrible.
The people did not deserve to
Elliot
know who
Davis.
Was responsible.
Elliot Davis was responsible for the cinematography. The dude has done things like Father of the Bride 2. He's also worked with Catherine Hardwicke, which I assume is why I got this movie, on her other films. One of which is Lords of Dogtown.
Yeah.
We both thought it was like really dope, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Very cool cinematography in there. Mm. Anyway, man just got up to shit in this one. Even did Man of Tai Chi, which should have taught him some karate things. But
yeah, but I mean, at the end of it all, it's Catherine Hardwicke who makes the final decision.
This is true.
So, let's get into it.
Let me give you guys a very brief synopsis. So, high school student Bella Swan, always a bit of a misfit, doesn't expect life to change much when she moves from sunny Arizona to Washington. to a rainy Washington state. There she meets Edward Cullen, a handsome but mysterious teen whose eyes seem to peer directly into her soul.
Ooh.
Edward is a vampire whose family does not drink blood.
Ooh.
And Bella, far from being frightened, enters into a dangerous romance with her immortal soulmate. But you laugh, Halloween.
That is, yeah, that's, I was so filled with angst.
just thinking back to the first one. Yeah.
So, what are your initial thoughts, Jody?
Initial thoughts, Taylor Lautner had the worst wig ever. In that first movie.
Yeah, his wig game was not on point.
We very briefly spoke about the cinematographer already, but truly this movie was very badly shot. And guys, this isn't us. I know that the audience has some fear that we are just going to go into this and kind of trash these movies.
I'm
talking about this objectively.
100%.
Objectively, this movie was terribly, terribly shot.
Yeah.
The use of Dutch angles, the way that they show.
Out of nowhere, even when, because Dutch angles are usually used to show sort of some uneasiness or, you know, there's something that's not quite right in the world that your character's in.
But so this camera is then off-center. So you see these at weird angles.
Set at the... What angle is that?
45.
Big mess.
Yeah, man.
Your angle is... Your axis is sort of set at 45. For no reason, there were so many Dutch angles. No, I thought it was a Dutch movie.
Yeah. So many Dutch angles. Catherine, how do we get?
Hello, I am Edward Cullen. Nice to meet you.
He's a crazy Dutch bastard.
Would you like some butcher pollen?
Oh, would you like a smoke and a pancake?
I love cold.
Oh, cold member reference.
Cold member reference. So good. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Back to Twilight.
Yeah. The camera angles, it's so bad that it actually takes me out of the story constantly because of what they're doing. I'm focusing more on... Why would you angle things like that as opposed to paying attention to the story?
Yeah, it really pulls you out of it.
It really, really does. I felt that the dialogue was also very stilted in this movie.
Apparently that is true to the books, kind of.
That was my
feeling. That's what I've heard. Like, I've spoken to some people. Like, we have a panel of experts.
Shout out to...
Didi, who I didn't actually contact. But Hilda, and then I spoke to one other person who I can't remember. But, you know, the Lord remembers.
And you will get your blessings, of course.
So, according the books, the dialogue in the books are kind of that stilted as well.
Mm. Look, the book is your source material, right?
Yeah.
And the people aren't always faithful to translating source material to the films. I would put a bit more blame on the director's shoulders here and say that if you put something to film and you see that it's not working well, why just leave it like that?
But Stephanie Meyer was heavily involved in these films. She was.
Yeah.
She's even in the first one.
I didn't know.
So there's a diner scene. There's a diner scene where Bella and her father is in the fucking diner, and Stephanie Meyer is one of the customers.
Mm-hmm.
She's also at the wedding in the fourth movie.
Uh huh.
Sorry, I've been researching.
Just drop us with them knowledge
because we tried to do this justice to the best of our ability. We didn't come here to shit in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We super objective. Anyway, carry on, Jody.
What I do like, and this is something that they often use in fantasy movies and fantasy books as well, is that they introduce us to things through a child's perspective, or not a child, but a young person's perspective.
Well, she's like a fucking child.
Yeah, she's like, 16 at the start of the movie?
Yeah, well, not only that, but then the frame of mind. The naivete.
I was on a positive point.
sorry.
So, and what that does is it allows us to be introduced to a fantastical world. So, a world that we don't understand, that we need to be explained to. So, Bella, Kristen Stewart's character, being our proxy and being young, makes it easier for us as the audience to kind of find out what's going on in this world.
Yeah.
So, it's a useful starting off point. But I feel as though... Even though they do that, like I said, the dialogue still feels very stilted. I feel that the young actors, because everyone in this movie was very young when it was being filmed.
Yeah, they were quite young.
Kristen Stewart was 17. Robert Pattinson.
Taylor Lautner was like 16.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like they needed better direction from the director in terms of just like be a bit more of yourself instead of trying to play a character who is nervous.
Kristen Stewart irritated the shit out of me in this movie. The twitchiness, the constant. I know. So again, speaking to our panel of experts, she's apparently worse in the book.
So she softened the character.
Like, she's such a weak character in the books, is what I heard. And in this movie, I was also like, gee whiz, what are you doing? There's no, how could we relate? How could we like look up to her? How could she inspire us at all? Because she's so dumb.
Well, in the same breath, she is at least legitimately young.
Yeah.
One of my big issues, and I think this is probably the author's fault. Well, yes. If Edward has graduated like 1,000 times from school at this point already, the dude's over 100 years old, right? He was born in 1904.
Yeah.
Why the hell does he think like a child as well?
I don't know. Again, I think this must be explained in the books.
Well, and this is where I'll give shout out to my panel of experts also, Nadine, Michelle. I had a few people. Remember, he's perpetually going to be 18 or 19 because that's like his age, right? But he should surely be filled with more wisdom.
Yeah, but mentally, is he stuck at 17?
It seems like it.
No, I mean, in the books, like legit.
No, well, I didn't ask him that. Oh, okay. But I'm just saying that from the sense that I get is that the character's motivations and things were faithfully carried over into the movie.
Yeah.
But they don't feel as though the full scope of, like, depth of motivation for what they do was necessarily translated.
Okay.
So Edward comes across as a lot colder than what he is in the books and is therefore harder to relate to in the movies than what he is in the books.
There's actually a book that she wrote from Edward's perspective.
Didn't they do that with 50 Shades of Grey as well?
Yes, and she was actually upset. That's a whole drama there. Because she was going to release it. There was a rumor. She had released the unedited version online.
Mm.
So E.L. fucking James also was like, hey, here's my chance. I'm going to do this also. And then Stephanie Meyer was upset because she didn't. E.L. James now released it before she could release her official version.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, it's fucking bananas. I've been twilighting it up, my bro. Yeah. Anyway. So in that story, you could probably, you know, they could give more backstory as to what Edward was thinking and all this, but you get none of that from this.
There's none of that. And I also feel like it's very low stakes. Sure. So at no point did I feel like I became invested in the story. I saw the potential for the romance between the two. I felt like even with all the stilted dialogue and the weird character motivations, that you can see there's chemistry between
Chris Stewart. It's not just nobody speaks the way they speak.
Yeah.
No one speaks like that.
No one does.
It's so fucking odd. Yeah. The scene in the classroom where she enters the classroom with the fan.
Oh, yeah.
Where he went to do my mock. That was one of my favorites.
And that's the first time we see him.
I was busting.
You know, it's the second time we see him, right? He did his slow-mo intro before that. But there's that. There's the scene where I actually felt like it was a very well-filmed scene until, you know, when she when she comes to his house and they playing the piano, the song of the piano.
Fun fact, that was written by Robert Pattinson.
Well, it's a really nice song.
It is a good song. It's called Bella's Lullaby.
Yeah, and he's like, this is my favorite song. And they're playing it and it's really romantic.
Yeah.
And then he decides to jump out the window and go jump between trees. And he calls a spider monkey for no apparent reason. Spider monkey. Why?
I don't know.
It's like, I don't understand when you have such a beautiful moment that's building.
Yeah.
You take us out of it and you want to showcase the
Not only that, but like the special effects just are horrible in this first one. The running, when they're supposed to be running super fast, they're just speeding it up. So there's ways you can fake a vampire moving fast. I mean, which doesn't cost too much, I guess. But speeding up the camera for them to run, it's the worst way you can do it.
Look, overall, I felt that this first movie, I can understand that fans were excited about it, but if this was just me coming into a film series and I watched that first one, I would not have carried on.
Oh, boy.
We mentioned the special effects. The budget for this one was the lowest out of all the films.
It was, which is what usually, I mean, even if you start with a franchise, it's still a gamble. Mm. Even if, you know, the franchise has a major following, it's still a gamble. So you want to go in low, and then as the movies make more money, then you'll sort of siphon off some more money for the budget. But I do want to mention the baseball scene.
Oh, fuck me. I made a note about that. No, also.
Because it's actually, like, from what I can tell, it's a big deal in the books.
Why?
I don't know. Also, they're eating this ball at like 1,000 miles per hour. Bella is the umpire.
Yeah.
How the fuck is she supposed to see anything?
Well, she's got, like, she's just like, she's got their twitchy eyes, yo.
twitchy eyes moving fast like a fucking tweeter. And that also leads into one of my lol moments, which was when the three vampires, Laurent and James and
Isabel,
Victoria.
Oh, Victoria. Yes, yeah. The big bad.
The bad guys, when they enter the scene.
And they have the
yeah, but the carpet walk, man, as they enter, just watch it on YouTube if you can. It is the corniest shit known to man, because they're walking on a moving carpet, so it gives the illusion that they're gliding.
Nice.
But they foam it from all different angles, and they cut it, and they check it, and it looks so fucking bad.
And you know they're bad guys because their shirts are open.
Their shirts have to be open. They're not wearing shoes or so.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck happened there?
That's how vampires move quickly.
Baby.
Shoes can't keep up.
Nagani.
Anyway, number one terrible movie.
Such a bad film.
Catherine Hardwicke went on to do much better things than this, but this is a legitimately bad
Look, movie. I think everyone involved went to do better things than this.
So, we're not going to rate the individual movies.
No, we'll rate it as a whole.
We'll rate the saga as a whole.
Gotcha.
But yeah, number one, terrible.
Okay.
Rightio. Moving on to New Moon.
New Moon.
Directed by Chris Weitz, who did The Golden Compass, which is also a young adult adaptation.
Yes.
The cinematographer in this film also went on to work on things like Thor Ragnarok and the remake of Fright Night. So clearly the brow is a thing for vampire films.
Yeah, it's but it's better in this film.
Yeah, so it's the cinematographer is Javier Aguirre Sarobe.
No, you need Sarobe. You need to do that.
Again. Aguirre Sarobe.
And that's the one.
Shit,
we could be butchering that.
We really are. So, the synopsis for this one is that Bella is on the cusp of her 18th birthday and blissfully happy with her undead beau, Edward. While celebrating her birthday with Edward's family of vegetarian vampires, a frightening incident convinces Edward that he's simply too dangerous to be around his sweetheart. He decides to leave the town of Forks in order to ensure her safety, leaving her behind, angry and depressed.
I wouldn't call them vegetarian.
No, they drink blood.
They still drink blood.
It's blood.
Equivalent. So it would be more, it would be closer to me saying, I don't eat red meat.
Yeah. So Jenna's question to me was, were vegetarians upset about this movie? I was like, oh, I think...
thank God. They're still killing animals and shit. But I think, like, the vegetarian movement really needs to strive after this franchise. Otherwise, you know, Peter would have been knocking at their door.
Yeah. Look, I think this one's a vast improvement. Cinematography alone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just much more cleanly shot. They use very conventional filming techniques, which I like. The storyline was more engaging for me than the first one.
You can fuck off with that.
It was.
No, I found this
in comparison
this film,
with the first one.
Yeah, but the first one, at least, I had some lol moments. This one was so boring for me.
Well, for me, this one was more engaging because at least we now had Jacob, who had more characterization in this one than he had in the previous one. So he actually starts like coming through.
Okay.
And it was just a more engaging story than the first one for me. Maybe it's because I felt like I was not being pulled out of it as much.
I don't know. This was just so fucking boring. Especially like, okay, Edward is not in this film for a long time.
Yeah.
And that whole deal, maybe I just wasn't interested in it all. Like her angst and Jacob's angst and Edward's angst. Everybody's angst was just like, oh, this is too much angst.
Are all teenagers those angsty and existential?
I don't remember being that angsty. I mean,
were you thinking about your everlasting soul?
No, man, I was getting high.
And attending all of his classes.
That's
stay
right.
Stay in school, kids.
Stay in school. You can be high, but stay in school. I found it very... I'm actually surprised that you found this one.
I think, and this is actually some of the other notes that I made. I felt that the dialogue was less stilted. I think it's because the actors have matured also.
Yeah.
I feel like they were a bit more comfortable in their own shoes.
Don't get me wrong. It's definitely a better film than the first one. It just did not keep me there.
I think part of what frustrated you might have been also the whole subplot with Bella trying to... like, do risky things and stupid things.
And the two of, you know, her and Jacob falling in love. Like, okay, I suppose this is the question that we're going to get to eventually is, are you Team Edward or are you Team Jacob?
Team Helsing. Helsing should kill all of them.
Wow. I'm Team Charlie, actually.
Yeah, no, I'm Team Charlie.
Okay, we'll probably get into Charlie. But, like, I did not care as much about this. This is the one movie that doesn't have that much action.
It doesn't, but it does also show us the first transformation with the wolves, I think.
Yeah.
Which I liked a lot better than the vampire effects.
Yeah.
So I think special effects-wise, people who had watched the series, like the people I referenced earlier, actually, who read the books as well, told me that I should brace myself for bad wolf effects.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was that bad.
Me neither. I really didn't think it was all right.
Yeah.
It didn't pull me out of it. Exactly. They looked like wolves.
Exactly.
They sounded like wolves.
I just don't get the denim shorts uniform.
How does it come back?
I don't know. Then, like everything else they take off because it's going to tear.
And nobody says anything.
I know why. It's made from pure wolf cotton. So it's just like...
That's not a thing.
It's a werewolf thing.
No, it's like Hulk pants. They should have just had the werewolves still wearing the shorts.
Yeah. Because that's what would look natural.
Fun fact. So in the book, Jacob, once he does his whole transformation, he's massive. Like he's over 2 meters. He's like 2 meters tall and he's huge. Yeah. Mm. So Taylor Lautner was going to lose his role. They were going to cast someone else because he's just not big enough. So, motherfucker, after filming the first film, that nigga hit the job.
And then he was like, I'm going to be topless in all the other movies.
He hit the fucking jump so hard that they were like, okay, we can make this work.
And do you remember what Kristen Stewart says to him when she sees him the first time?
She doesn't. What touches, fella?
She touches his peg and she's like, you're beautiful.
Yeah.
Which is the same bloody thing she said to Edward when he sparkled in the sky.
Oh my god, it's a different type of beautiful. Okay, this guy is muscly.
He's wolfy-ful.
Yeah. Oh my god.
So look, I felt that they were vast improvements, and it's almost like the technical improvements made the film easier for me to watch.
Yeah.
And that's why I felt like, even though I was frustrated storyline-wise, the technical improvements made it a lot more bearable for me than the first film.
I get that. I found it boring as fuck. But then again, who knows what state of mind I was
in. And again, though, the stakes in this movie, for the longest time, there just isn't any, other than Bella being reckless. And then when Edward thinks she's dead, he's like... Yeah.
Okay. But they foreshadow the Romeo and Juliet thing. Yeah. They talk about Romeo and Juliet in the
beginning. She wakes up with a book.
Yeah, exactly. And then it was like the same thing.
Yeah.
He finds out that she's dead, and then I'm like, this is not good writing.
But they foreshadowed it, so it's fine. So foreshadowing is when you deliberately do something early in the film it's something that will happen later, that's going to have a payoff later in the movie, that you plant the seed early in the movie so that you can call back on that.
And say,
oh yeah, this is what they were referencing.
Yeah. And foreskin is the piece of skin you have around your penis.
That enhances the pleasure. Oh, wow.
So this film was a nice lead into the next one. Mm. I'll say that.
Yes.
In terms of, I understand when you have a book and whatever, there's so much story to tell. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this was the lull in the series for me to be like, okay, they need to tell me all of this so that I can have more context for the next film.
So, look, for me, definitely not as bad as the first one. Definite improvement, but still not really all that fantastic.
Yeah.
Moving on to Eclipse.
Ooh.
Directed by... David Slade, who also directed 30 Days of Night.
Nice, that's one of my favorites. As
vampire themes coming through strongly.
Look, this is also, there's no teeth. You never see fangs.
No, you don't.
Throughout the saga, there's not at any point.
Yeah.
And I forgot to ask my expert panel about that, if there's fangs in the book.
I didn't think to ask that either. So, hit us up in the comments.
Are there fangs in the Twilight book series?
So, let's go on to the synopsis for this one. Danger once again surrounds Bella. Oh, surprise.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
As a string of mysterious killings terrorizes Seattle and a malicious vampire continues her infernal quest for revenge. Amid the tumult, Bella must choose between a love for Edward and a friendship with Jacob, knowing that the decision may ignite the long simmering feud between vampire and werewolf.
This was cack. No, let me explain. I could tell from the start, right? Mm. It was not going to be Jacob.
Yes.
She's stuck in love with Edward. He doesn't have a chance. But this is the movie that's supposed to now be like, oh, they're fighting over and it's, who are you, Team Jacob? Bullshit.
Yeah. Look, I think that for us, maybe as a more mature audience watching this, we would know that, right? But put yourself in the shoes of someone who hasn't read the books.
An impressionable teenager
going to see the movie. They would very much be caught up in, and remember how big that old Team Edward, Team Jacob
was? Part of the marketing campaign.
It was insane.
Yeah.
So I can see that if you have people who didn't read the books or only watching the movies, how that would be a big thing and how you could play that up.
I guess. But like, it just irritated the shit out of me.
Yeah. I tried to not get too caught up in that from my side, because you can see that she's in love with Edward, but Jacob's just kind of always around. And even the dynamic where Edward's like, okay, you need to also go see Jacob type stuff.
Yeah.
It's just strange, man. I feel like they were trying to force the whole love triangle.
Yeah, but they were. But then again, that could be how it's explained in the books. It did seem forced to me as well.
Yeah.
The triangle. And she's a manipulative person.
She really comes across it.
She takes advantage of the fact that he loves her so, like, a few times.
And she just keeps him around when she needed him the most.
Yeah, she prayed with him. Yeah. The one scene where he's like, oh, I might as well just go kill myself. Uh-huh. And he's like, no, don't go. And he's like, why? Like, because I don't want to lose you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but why? And he's like, kiss me. I'm like, you're fucking engaged.
Exactly. And Edward was loving right there.
Right there. He can hear this whole cuck in his head.
And he can read minds. Because Jacob's thoughts are loud.
Jacob's thoughts are loud, yeah.
I will say this. Having discussed all of that, the third one is my favorite.
It's the action scene and the whole subplot with the shit. Nah?
It has the most coherent story for me.
Okay.
So I feel like this one had the most conventional movie setup.
Yeah.
Where we're building to a climax and the climax actually makes sense.
Yeah.
For this film, as opposed to the others where it's like, it felt like the climaxes weren't really connected to the rest of the story.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to Bella, isn't it? Mm. Everybody wants to either fuck Bella or kill Bella.
Yeah, she's magical. I'm not quite sure why. And
I don't get it either.
And I think, in which movie did they graduate? That comes in a later film.
They graduate in this one.
Or is it in this one?
I don't know. They get married in 4.
So then they graduate in this one.
Yeah.
And then Anna Kendrick's character like mentions, like, you know, everyone just wants to...
Oh my word. Can we just touch on that? The high school friends are so fucking irritating.
Yes.
There's a scene where he like brings her there and he tells her, you know, this is a rite of passage, your matriculation or whatever. And she looks at her friends over there and he's like, yeah, do you want to get out of here? I would have done the same thing. They are the worst friends. That Asian brother is fucking retarded.
That other guy.
Anna Kendrick is not a friend. She's a frenemy, if anything.
She's so jealous of Bella.
She's
Rachel McAdams in
Mean Girls. 100%. Yeah. That blonde guy just wants to bang her, but now, he doesn't want to bang anymore.
And he's like, he's not even in the top three.
She didn't have any real friends in the school. And also, the maturity level. Say what you want about Bella's maturity level. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Edward and Bella were like on this level. And then everyone else was at like this childish.
Super childish.
Immature state. It's so flippin' weird.
Something that I really liked in the third movie. They had the best backstory for any of the vampires. And I didn't really like the backstory bits that were like inserted into the other movies because I felt like they took me out of it. But Rosalind's character's backstory is far more than
I liked her. I mean, she was a bitch.
Her motivations were explained though. Because, 100%. You know, her backstory.
I mean, it took 3 movies.
I mean, her backstory being explained to us that she was changed into a vampire against the will. She was in love with a guy who manipulated her, changed her to a vampire, and then she became crazy and stuff. And that's why she didn't like that Bella was choosing to be a vampire, wanting to become one, because she didn't have that choice.
Yeah.
Best character motivations out of this whole series, probably. It's the motivations that made the most sense.
Mm.
It explained why a character was doing the shit that she was doing. And I felt like I would have made her a bigger character then and given her almost like a meteor.
How did they do that?
Yeah.
I mean, they only have 2 hours each.
I know, but now they've got me invested in her as a character because I actually feel her motivation.
But even so, after they you know, showed us some motivation and gave us a bit of backstory. Yeah. Then I felt again like she moved to the
exactly
to the rear. Yeah, you're right.
Because the focus is always
going to be the two of them.
And then Jacob as well.
Yo, Jasper, bruh. I cannot frit that bruh's face.
And then he just like suddenly becomes this amazing fighter.
Yeah, but even like he always looks like he's holding a drawl.
Yeah.
Is that his face or is that his character?
Bit of both. Bit of both. He's a character actor, so he was really constipated.
I could not at least. Ooh, going back to Twilight 1 quickly. Carlisle is the father.
Yeah.
The makeup and shit was so bad that his face and his neck were two different colors. Did you notice that?
No, I wasn't that deep into it.
I was like, who the fuck does this shit? Who
also, why was he a friendly... It was so weird that he was like a friendly dad vampire.
No, I'm Tim Carlisle, bro.
No, I like him. But I'm saying it was weird because when they first show him coming out of the police station and he's all like... I thought, okay, he's going to be like this vampire who's actually manipulating the town. No. Which is the typical, you know...
Turns out he's the best fucking dad ever.
Yeah, he loves his adopted kids.
Like, he's willing to die for that, for those kids,
and
man.
And encourages incest within his...
He does. I mean, look.
Family.
They're going to live for so long. They might as well fuck each other.
Just a couple of each other.
But he's like the best, bro. He like fixes or tries to fix at least all their problems. Has a plan. He cares. Mm. He's got his thirst under control. Carlisle, I'm Team Charlie and Team Carlisle.
Yeah, man. Me too.
Fuck them all.
Look, I will also say this. The backstories are engaging, but I also feel like they keep putting a brake on the momentum of the main story.
Yeah.
And maybe this is what happens when you try and make your movies too bloody long, because
they don't all need to be 2 hours.
They don't.
The second one especially. Jesus.
Exactly. And they kept pushing for these longer runtimes. Like, they could have cut it down to 1 hour 30 and had a really tight, continuous story with exciting climaxes. So,
like, omit some things
for
the greater good.
Yeah.
They could have definitely done that.
So, look, for me, I've had, to this point, a steady up surge in terms of quality for the movie.
Definitely.
That was
well,
my feeling.
The second one was $50 million, and the third one, $68 million.
And you can really see that the improvement in quality of everything. Like, the way that the effects are shown.
Why was the first movie so great?
Dude, that touches on something that bugged me throughout all of these movies. So, the first one, it was so gray, I think, because they were trying to establish that she's going to a rainy town, and it's rainy all the time.
Yeah.
That's why he has to find special places to spark.
And then when they show Bella in Arizona, just to make sure you know it's Arizona, she's in the desert and she's holding cacti.
Exactly.
It's like,
in case you didn't know,
Arizona has cities, man. Why did they just put it in a
city? But now, if you're establishing that you need this darker town for them to exist so that because there's no sun, why are all the other movies shot in such a bright light? So even when it's supposed
and
to be rainy,
in the sun, there are times when they're in the
and
sun and
no
they don't sparkle.
Exactly. So
inconsistent.
It bugged me.
Ugh. What were we talking about?
Can we move on to Breaking Wind part one? Sorry. Breaking Dawn.
Breaking Wind.
One. So interesting thing about Breaking Dawn, both films were directed by Paul Condon. They were shot back to back.
Yeah, this was also one of those trends where they split the last book into two.
Yes.
To make more money.
Yeah, and I think we're going to definitely be speaking about the
money,
the idea of splitting books and whether they
was it necessary? Anyway. Let's get into it.
Let's get into the synopsis of the first one. So, at last, Bella and Edward are getting married. When Jacob finds out that Bella wants to spend a honeymoon as a human, he's horrified. For Edward's passion could accidentally kill her.
Because he knows Edward's going to be
pump
dead.
Her
he's going to fuck her to death.
How would he know that, though?
Yeah, he knows.
Is he a vampire?
I hope not. Imagine what the wolf says. Do they do a doggy style?
Yo, asking you the important question.
Yeah, that's what we want to know. Hey, you guys that have read the books, do they do it doggy style or not?
Anyway, so Bella does indeed survive a honeymoon, but a new complication arises when she discovers that she's pregnant and the child is growing at an alarming rate. The pregnancy sets the wolves against Bella and Edward, but Jacob vows to protect his friend.
friend.
Yeah, no plural.
She put you in the friend zone, bro.
Hard.
Yo, this one, wow. I mean, they get married and she's pregnant.
That's basically the whole movie.
That is it. That is it. That is
with,
it.
With quite a few, like, random, like, visions. Are they supposed to be, like, visions of the future? And then...
I don't know. Dreams, I mean, or nightmares? Alice is the one that can see the future. Bella just has these weird dreams.
Uh-huh.
And shit. This could have been an episode. Like a 30 minute.
And this actually segues into what I mentioned earlier, which is the fact that they decided to split this last book into two movies. When you look at the stories of these last two films, just doesn't make sense. There's not enough material.
They orbited this one.
They orbited the shit out of this one. It was really to their own detriment, because then things that should have happened within the space of like 30 or 40 minutes gets dragged out to 2 hours.
It is so long. It's dragged so much. I mean, that honeymoon scene, not the scene, but like the whole, the sex, and then, oh, you're bruised, and then, oh, I don't want to hurt you, and then they play chess. Oh, my goodness.
You know, technically, this was a sequel to The 40-Year-Old Virgin, The 100-Year-Old Virgin. Because Eddie ain't formed before, man. This was his first
time. Wait, was he a virgin?
He alluded to the fact that he was waiting for marriage the whole
fucking
time.
Lying.
He's pure. Do you not see how he sparkles?
He's a pure liar. There's no way you live for 100-odd years and you don't fuck something.
It explained his nerves. Man broke that bed.
And then they show like the bruises on their arm. Imagine what a fucking crotch looks like. Talk about blow lipper.
Anyway, like the synopsis said, Bella survived.
Fucking barely, bro. And Bella, shame. All she wants to do is bang, bro. Like she's into it. She just married the guy that she loves. He took her virginity. She loved it. And she's like, all she wants to do is get down. And he's like, I don't want to hurt you. I just want to be
scared. It's because he was nervous because he was a 100-year-old virgin. No, it's the same like Steve Carell. He kept finding excuses not to do it.
Feels like a bag of sand.
So look, for me, this one was a definite drop in quality again. I felt like...
I don't know if it's a drop in quality. I think it's just the sin of trying to stretch it out.
So let me rephrase. Not quality, because, again, immaculately shot.
It looks
much better. The budget in this one was the first substantial leap that we've had.
Yeah, 110 million.
It went from 68 million in part 3 to 110 million in this one.
Just for part 1.
Exactly. Yeah. So that shows you that they're investing more, that they... Everything looks better, but the story in this one
suffers.
It suffers. There's no story actually. The whole movie is basically the wedding, the honeymoon, and then giving birth to the baby, and then Bella getting 1,000 love bites and waking up with red eyes. Did you know that vampire bites, love bites, can cure death?
Yes.
Have they tried it for the Rona?
No.
Because that shit's been around. Have you tried giving vampire love bites?
Oh my word. Listen, can we talk about the CGI baby?
Yeah, sure. Jenna was pissed, right? Jenna didn't watch many of the movies with me.
Yeah.
She saw the second half of part 4 then the last one she watched most of it with me. That baby was like...
Yo.
She kept... It was the only thing on her mind the whole time.
Creep down, my bro. It was so creepy. It was the uncanny valley baby.
Mm-hmm.
You have your stylized version of something and you have your real version of something on opposite sides of the spectrum. And the uncanny valley sort of is in between the two. That kind of... It kind of looks real, but it's very unsettling. And this baby... But not only the baby. As the child grows, they only stop the CGI child in like... fucking halfway through the second film.
I know. And I think the only reason they did that was so that the child could hold people's faces. I think that's the only reason. Because
CGI the hand. Don't CGI the face.
But you see, it's when they have too much money that they do this. Give them too much money, they're like, CGI, baby.
No, you could have taken that money, just put it to like craft services or something for the crew. But like, that was unnecessary, man. Come on.
And look, I'll say again, though, for me, storyline-wise, because it felt so low stakes. The fact that you know there's another movie coming now, that there's a finale, means that we all know that it's likely to either end on like a cliffhanger or be like unresolved. They half-assed it, I think.
They half-assed the whole shit, okay? Remember, here's a life lesson. Don't half-ass many things. Whole-ass one thing.
That's advice from the Bicycle Grasser, bringing the important information to you young folk out there.
Okay, can we talk about how Jacob wants to fuck a baby?
Oh, yeah.
That happens in this one.
He imprints.
Imprints on her. Yeah. He goes in, he's like, oh, shit, I'm lost, brother. Everything's fucked. I'm going to kill this baby. And he walks in and he's like, oh, my God.
Fresh bar.
Look at that baby.
Yeah, she's mine.
Imprints on the baby. How fucking gross is that?
It doesn't mean what you think it means.
Okay. Okay. What? At that point, we didn't know that.
No,
we granted. Don't. But if you jump quickly to the next film, you do realize that they end up together.
Yes.
So it does kind of mean what you think it means.
So here's another question that I have for you.
Uh-oh.
Did you know you can milk vampires?
Oh, like a cat.
And just think, to this point, we haven't seen vampire teeth. So what are they milking? Where did they get Edward's venom? And that was a lot of venom.
I didn't even fucking consider that. It was a syringe, like a foot long.
And they got venom from somewhere. Do you think he's got nipples? And you know, anything with nipples can be mopped.
Right, fucker. So, if you read the books, how do they milk Edward's venom? Get back to us at bitescrowbusters@gmail.com. No, but that is a fucking good question.
That weirded me out, right? He just conveniently had like a huge...
This is my venom. And he like sticks it straight into her heart.
He didn't even use a Sharpie. Like Pulp Fiction.
No.
Brass like just like...
He went the raw dog there. Just went straight. Boom.
Oh, anyway.
And it looked like silver silver nitrate.
Like, it did look like.
Yeah, it looked like that.
Or like melted adamantium.
Seize! In bodily fluids.
Okay, so what were your thoughts? In a nutshell, what did you think of part 4 versus the 3 that we've seen so far?
In a word, unnecessary.
Yeah.
They could have put part of this into this one.
Part 3.
Part 3. And then part of it into Breaking Dawn. Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, disappointing.
100%.
Very disappointing.
Let's go to the last. Ooh, we almost at the end of our journey.
Almost at the end of them. We almost at Mordor.
I can't do it. You're going to have to carry me sideways.
We should have flown on the Eagles, damn it. Anywho, so this one has the exact same team as I mentioned earlier from the first Breaking Dawn film.
Look, which is a smart decision for continuity purposes.
Definitely. So in this one, Bella awakes as a vampire from a life-threatening labor and a newborn daughter, Renesmee.
Oh my God.
Yo, that's like when Colin and Daddy combine the names.
This is exactly what I thought. Exactly what I thought. This is a Colin thing. When they combine names. Okay, but I've also recently found out that it's also an Afrikaans thing.
Yes, it is.
Because white Afrikaans people also do it. Johandre, I heard that's a word.
So many of my friends from school had like their parents' names combined.
That's insane. Like guys and girls. But they come up with Renesmee.
Yeah.
It's Renee and Esme.
Yes.
Oh my word. I once was at the till and this chick, she was obviously helping me and I looked at her name badges. Here's a pro tip. Always look at the people's name badges.
Yes.
Her name was She-Earl.
As opposed to He-Earl.
So it was S-H-E-Earl.
Like because her daddy is most heel.
Like they looked at the name Earl and they were like, how can we feminize this? Oh, I know. You heard of She-Hulk.
And He-Man and She-Ra.
You're horrible, but Renesmee,
we digress.
Sorry, but I lolled at that point. I lolled, bro.
Yo, and they had to accept it, right? So they were like, oh. While Bella adjusts to a new state of being, Renesmee experiences accelerated growth. When the Volturi learn of the baby's existence, they declare her to be an abomination and sentence the Cullens to death. Bella, Edward, and the rest of the clan seek help from allies around the world to protect their family.
This might be my favorite one, actually. Just because of, like, the fight.
Which wasn't real.
No, which wasn't real. But Renesmee, that's definitely a highlight for me.
Yeah.
I also thought... I don't think Kristen Stewart is that attractive, in my opinion. I don't... She's not, like, drop-dead gorgeous for me. But in terms of looks, if we want to break it down to looks, don't worry, I'm going to do the guys too. she looks the best in this one. She's also wearing a wig in this one. Yeah, in Breaking
Bad. I thought the volume was the vampire juice.
No, the silver nitrate. It's not. It's a wig. But you know who's also wearing a wig?
Who's Edward?
And he looks the best, yeah, to me as well. This is my favorite hairstyle. The long sideburns of part one, two or three. Horrible, bro. What are you doing?
It was like the lamb chop got cut.
Exactly. It was right there below his ear. Yeah. Too long. He has great hair, yeah. And I mean, this is peak Jacob.
Peak.
I mean, his ribs got ribs, bro.
Yeah, he was.
But I think it's
so
that's what pedophilia brings up. You just want to be a big guy.
Just pumping.
You just want to impress that baby.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so gross.
Anyway, look.
Getting back to the film.
It's weird. We haven't mentioned the Volturi up to this point.
Yeah.
They are like the... Kind of like the overarching bad guys in this thing. They
more stereotypical vampire. Yeah. You know, the tropes are there. They wear the black robes. I do love Michael Sheen.
I love Michael Sheen too.
He chews scenery in the best way.
No, he embraces the corniness
really
of his
character. And this is his fourth vampire film or something. He was in Underworld?
Yeah, was he in Underworld?
Yes.
I didn't know he was...
He played a werewolf in Underworld. Not a werewolf, a lichen.
It was a lichen.
I liken that idea. Yo, he's so funny today.
So funny.
So he was kind of a highlight for me. Dakota Fanning.
Yeah. As the super psycho.
Yeah, because she can, like, inflict pain with your thoughts type thing. And he has to hold you in a creepy way. Like, when an uncle shakes your hand for too long, he does
that. And they put their pinky in your palm and they scratch it. Oh!
They just finger your hand. Oh, gross.
You can't do anything.
Yeah, we've all had that uncle, right? Right, guys?
Right? Reach out to us at... Yo, anyway, the Volturi... kind of this, like, your stereotypical vampires were also this council who control vampire.
They're like the governing body of
vampires.
And but they're super creepy and super weird. And they're in this room the whole time with three thrones.
In Rome.
They're based in Italy.
Yeah.
They're Italians. Someone does refer to them as the Italians.
Yeah.
Those two.
Yeah.
I want to suck your blood.
Yeah, the guy from Shameless and who plays Mickey in Shameless, and I don't even know the other guy.
That accent took me out of it. I'm sorry. Yeah. When they appeared and they're like, hi, hello, I am a vampire man. And I was like,
we're going to fight the Italians.
What the fuck is this?
Yeah, it was weird.
So strange. But the Volturi, they have their own motives.
So they are pissed because according to vampire law, you can't have a baby.
Yeah, because children are too unpredictable.
You can't turn children.
Yeah, they can't control their thirst. Mm. They kill villages at a time.
Yeah.
And their most important rule is discretion.
Yes.
Nobody must know that vampires exist. And when children are vampires, they can't keep the secret, you know. Mm. Mommy, look, I did a poo.
Yeah, exactly. Mommy, look, I ripped off heads.
Yeah. Mommy, look, I killed a family of 10.
So the whole premise of this movie is that after Renesmee is revealed to the...
I can't deal with that name. Every time they said it in the film also, I had a smirk on my face.
Yeah. Much like everyone else.
Yeah, like, what did Jacob calls a Nessie?
Yeah, the Loch Ness Monster.
That was a fun scene, though.
End scene.
When she's beating the shit out of him, yeah. And he's like, It's not what you think.
But also, can we just talk about the casual dog? What do you call it? Dogism? The discrimination against dogs. Yeah,
discrimination against dogs. And you know what? I fucking love dogs. So that pissed me
off. I know. Like, throughout this whole series, they're like, oh, you stink. You stink. The vampires hate the werewolves.
Mm.
And whenever there's a werewolf around that... smells like dog in here. Smells
like dog in here. And you're like, fuck you, bro.
Exactly.
You don't even have a beating heart.
You smell like cat piss.
And then Bella also, when she's turned, she smells Jacob.
And she's like, oh, Jacob, you stink.
Yeah, I know what you were talking about. Jacob, you fucking stink. I'm so glad I'm
And here. Then he just smiles, but he's like, I'm going to chase your daughter.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to beat that shit up. And there's nothing you can do about it.
So, again, going back to the premise.
Oh, yes, of course.
The Volturi find out about Renesmee through Edward's cousin, who she was
also
the lover of someone.
Who how did she just appear there on that mountaintop watching them?
And then she employed a Braveheart's Eyes of the Hawk to see what was happening
there. It's insane. And then she jumps into the ice cold water to escape.
And swims to...
Instead of having a conversation with Bella, like... What was she doing?
She was that child in school that used to pimp. That's why.
Bruh, listen. I got a big beef with pimpers, my bro. Anytime there's a character on any television show or anything, then their face just looks like a pimp. And then I'll tell Abby, look at this,
bro. It's like that light in Recess.
Yes.
The pimper in Recess.
Oh, my word.
A little weasel.
Hunched over. Yeah. Anyway, so... if you've read the books, please explain to me how that woman gets there and why, what her purpose was being there. Like, I didn't get it. They were just playing in the field in like this isolated area. There was nobody around, and this chick just appeared to like.
She was just like hanging out.
Yeah, so weird.
Because she's from Alaska as well, right? She's from the Alaskan family, and
she's from the Alaskan family.
And she's like not happy with them because.
So apparently, in Book with Edward, it's called Midnight Sun, I think.
Ah.
He goes to Alaska in that period where he's like, oh, Bella, you stink, and then he fucks her up.
So that's where he went. He disappeared.
For those few days, he goes to Alaska.
Oh.
And he finds out that those Alaskan vampires, the females, the daughters or whatever, they like to fuck human guys.
Oh.
So they don't, they said, oh, like feeding on, banging them and like feeding on them. It wasn't like as much fun, but we should just like bang them.
Okay.
It's so weird.
Yeah, I thought he had timeshare like the vampires in 30 Days of
Night. So he had like a weird experience there. He was like, oh, I'm going back to high school. And then he lived.
That's the type of thing that just says you're like, to school. Oh, they pump humans.
Gross.
Something I didn't like in this film was that the introduction of all of these new characters, like the vampires from the Amazon, the Irish, those two weird guys in the Fountains of Your Blood, and like everyone else that suddenly is revealed, felt like a huge fucking Deus Ex Machina, just like revealed, like, oh, we were alone the entire time through all these other movies, now we've got allies.
Yeah.
Or what they call it, witnesses.
Witnesses. No? Well, they were gaining Brasa to come fight. They can call it witnesses all they want.
Yeah, but it felt weird, man. Like, these characters, even though they tell us in earlier movies that there are other vampires in the world, suddenly it's like, and Rami Malek, like the
he's playing
Captain Planet.
He's going to take pollution down to zero. That was so strange. So, I didn't even know he was in that fucking film. Did you like the place, a little bit?
I really didn't like the, like, suddenly there's all these conveniently superpowered vampires who can come help us in this fight.
They could have fleshed that out if they were going to... They wasted too much time in part one.
Exactly.
They could have fleshed these things out. It would have been served the story a bit better.
They could have been mentioned in any of the other movies. They could have been foreshadowed 100%. In any of those other films.
And Bella is apparently a savant when it comes to her vampire powers.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
She can hoe herself in. She can project her defense.
Yeah.
She's just amazing.
Do everything. Yeah. And I feel like that kind of sucks. Because if you think about it, you watch any sports movie, you see the hard work they put in.
Exactly.
It wasn't even a montage.
Yeah, and I think this is something that made her character almost like unlikable to a degree for me throughout the series. Because when she starts and she goes to school, she immediately is accepted by people.
Mm.
There's none of that, like, she's coming into school in the middle of the year. They make a big thing of referencing that. Yeah. Like, she's joining midway through the school year.
Yeah.
She immediately makes friends, immediately falls in love with the like, best-looking guy and the most, like, exclusive guy there.
Yeah.
And it's like everything kind of just, like, happens for her throughout. So it's like there's nothing that gets you rooting for her, really, because...
Well, she never really had a struggle, did she?
It doesn't seem like it.
Her biggest struggle was Edward leaving her that one time.
Yeah, but then she got Jacob and did a whole lot of stupid shit.
Melodrama, that's what it is.
So it made her character very hard to like for me.
Yeah, and I don't know if she's any better in the books, but I will give her this. She's way stronger than when she started.
Yes.
She isn't such a weakling, because although they need to save her constantly.
Yes. That actually is another thing that, for me, it kind of makes her seem as like a plot device throughout.
Yeah.
There isn't really like her character.
This whole shit is because of Bella.
Yes.
All the fighting, everything. All the fucking conflict, everything is because of her.
Exactly.
Is she worth it? Is my question. But she looked so basic. Did you see what she was wearing? She didn't even dress quite.
She didn't even have a perm in the first place.
I mean, I know you don't need it. You don't need a lot of money to put a good outfit together. She could go to Mr. Price. She could find something, you know, a little bit more fucking your pumps. She's a pumps woman. Do you know what pumps are?
Those shoes.
Yeah, they're shoes, but they're just like, they're flat. And the bane of my existence. Pumps are the most basic fucking shoes. Yes.
So, this podcast is about movies.
I have other interests, Tony.
So, for me, Bella is too often made a plot point.
Yeah.
Without her character actually, like, as you say now, we see her growing, but her growth is through events, where she's just like this passive little thing that is being fought over or protected.
What has she learned? What has she learned at the end of it all?
That she'll get what she wants. Throughout. And also, like, her daddy is gonna die and she's just gonna disappear at some point.
I'll give her this also. I do feel like, you know, like she says when she, you know, she's a vampire and she's like super strong and she breaks shit and whatever, she says, "I was born to be a vampire."
Yeah, she does mean.
So her physical performance, if you go from the first movie to the last one, it does seem like she is now in total control of her body.
Yeah.
Which I did appreciate, at least.
That's true. It feels like we grew. And I'll also say that, much like for me in part three onwards, it felt like everyone was more comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
Like the characters grew into themselves, the actors playing the characters grew into their characters as well.
They had no choice in this thing. You can't get out of your contract.
They could
also, this is food on your table for the next, like, good few years. The Kellan Lutz guy, I liked him. The big doofus vampire.
He went on to play a very shit version of Hercules.
Let's not talk about this. even Taylor Lautner's his career didn't go anyway after this, to be fair.
And look, that... For me, that's it's an interesting discussion point also, because Taylor Lautner tried to do mainstream shit, right?
He did. He tried to be like the action, cool, young, hip guy.
Yeah, and Kellan Lutz for that matter as well. They all went in, both of them went into mainstream shit.
It didn't work though.
Robert Pattinson took the kind of crazy decision to totally get out of the limelight and do indie, cheap movies.
Yeah, but like, do you know what the difference is?
What's that?
Talent.
He can act.
Taylor Lautner is not a good actor.
No.
Oh my God. No. The anger, when he's supposed to be angry and shit, I was like, I would never take this guy
seriously.
That's
why they change him to a wolf.
Yeah. Anytime when actor. He's like, I was talking.
So going back to number five, you say this is possibly your favorite one.
Just the action scene. I think it's the best action scene. Maybe the third one is my favorite.
I'm disappointed in the action scene.
No, but the action scenes across the board are terrible.
Yeah.
They're badly choreographed. I don't understand how they fight. They just push and run.
And for me, even in five movies, at no point did they figure out how they want to represent their vampire fighting style in these movies, which is just weird because they make so much effort to showcase their powers. right? From the first movie, we actually, they give up on plot to show us that Edward is fast, that Edward is strong, that Edward can jump high.
Yeah.
So they make a special effort to showcase the powers, but then don't actually have ways where we see it pay off.
Yeah.
You know?
But I do like all the decapitations in the
shitload of it.
Love that. Love that.
Do you think it was a masturbation reference?
Of course. Flick it till your head comes up. No, I did enjoy that at least. I was like, oh, if there was blood, yeah, this would be R rated.
Yeah, no. It was Edward coming off with no blood.
Popping, man, bro.
So,
what is your favorite one?
So, how about we rank?
Okay.
How about we do a ranking?
Okay, let's do that.
I've got a ranking. I'm going to do mine from worst to best.
Okay.
For these movies. Worst, obviously, part one.
Yeah.
I will put part four after part one then, purely because of my disappointment at how the movies have been an upward trajectory and then they just totally gave up on story from there. After this, I'll do 1, 4, 2, 5, and then 3. 3 was my favorite. I think 3 had the most coherent story and the best like climax in relation to the movie.
Yeah. I don't think I can do it any differently, honestly. That is the way I view it. That one, it was, one was surprisingly bad.
Yeah.
Because it was our first foray into this, but I didn't think it was going to be that bad.
As a standalone movie.
Yeah. Okay. So I think our ranking is the same. Mm. Who's your favorite character?
Sure. I'd actually legit go for what's Bella's dad's name?
Charlie.
Again? Yeah.
Charlie.
He had like the right level of exasperation. You know, he's looking at this as like a normal dad. And when he sees these guys fighting over his daughter, when he sees her stupid reactions and he tries to have chats to her, the acceptance of her marriage, the beautiful poignant moments that he has with her.
Yeah.
He was cool. And then other dad.
Carlisle. This is a dad film.
Yeah.
Why I like Charlie so much is because he's just doing his best.
Yeah.
He's not trying to get up in her business. Mm-hmm. He's trying to give her the right amount of freedom. Mm-hmm. He's trying to build a relationship with her the best way he can.
Yeah.
And he's just doing his best. And what does she do? She fucks him.
She does.
Over and over. She doesn't take him care. She says, oh, I can't hurt him. You've been hurting him from the start, bitch. No, I feel for Charlie, man. Charlie's my guy.
We don't even see when Charlie eventually finds out she's dead.
I didn't even realize Charlie had a kid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I must
that
have.
Just, maybe no, because it just happened. They hinted at it from part 3 onwards, I think, that he was eyeing the Chiefs.
That should have been a bigger deal.
It should have.
Charlie's happiness should have been a bigger deal.
Tell me this, though. You know when they explain that they have... Jacob tells Charlie that Bella and Edward adopted someone's...
A niece. Edward's niece, yeah.
The child is like how old they?
Yeah.
Like a baby.
Yeah, right? But then they bring the child
for Christmas.
And he's like, yo, she grew like, oh, 2 feet.
Is that all that happened?
Yes.
I missed that. I was like, why is he so accepting?
It's just like a one night because he's Charlie.
Charlie's dope, man.
Charlie will accept most things as long as his daughter is happy.
Yeah.
And he's okay. Charlie is the best.
Charlie's the truth.
Second best is Carlisle for sure. Totally agree with you. Carlisle, all he does is fix teenagers'
Well, that's what happens when you perpetually vampire.
All he does is deal with teenagers' cack and try to fix the situation.
Ross, do you think that... Is there anything else you want to add? Like, do you want to summarize the saga?
I'll summarize it this way. I didn't think it was as bad as I initially thought.
Mm.
And I understand the pop culture, you know, impact that it had. I understand it. I am glad that I don't have to watch it again.
Yeah. But I agree.
At least I'll be able to, when people bring Twilight up, I will be able to give, you know, an opinion that is not from a place of hate or just wanting to shit on the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I'm... To a degree, I'm kind of glad that I've now watched it.
Mm, I feel like we reborn.
Yeah. As a vampire. I feel like now, like you said, if when I give my opinions, I can give it from a place of, I've watched it, I can say what I like and don't like.
Yeah.
And I can have a conversation with the fans.
You're going to read the books for us, right?
No. This, we did this out of our love for our audience. Unless you motherfuckers pay me a shitload of money, I will not be reading these books. I will not be indulging.
Jody takes payment in chicken wings.
Shout out, Rocco Mamas. I think that a lot of the issues, unfortunately, is book related. Mm. I think that Stephanie Meyer's involvement with this film, to me, it feels like so many of the issues are things that were probably taken from the books.
Yeah.
And it bogged the story down. There's almost like too much service to the author.
Yeah.
And just, again, the decision to make the last book into two movies, they built up such good momentum to that point, and then they shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
So
I mean, she started writing this series because she had a dream about two people in a field, and one of them was glowing.
Oh.
One of them was shining. That's how she
started. There was surprisingly little sparkle.
There was such little sparkle. Even in the final scene of the movie, when they're in the field, he's not sparkling. Both of them are not sparkling.
Exactly.
One thing that I do hate about this franchise is that it spawned 50 Shades.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so the 50 Shades is based on fan fiction of Twilight.
Oh my God.
So E.L. James wrote fan fiction on Twilight, and then she turned it into 50 Shades.
As if one bloody book series wasn't enough. Yes. I think
we will never ever suggest watching 50 Shades.
That will never be an option.
No, you never. Can fuck right.
I think my final point on this is that I think that this had the potential to be something the love
special.
Story for this generation.
It could have been something special.
It really could have, but unfortunately, I don't think they delivered on that.
A better script writer, or screenwriter, I would say, could have taken liberties with it to make the story a bit better. But because that bitch was on set...
You will respect my books.
Anyway.
Oh, that's my Stephanie Meyer impersonation.
You're spot on. Fucking spot on.
So, yo, dude. Moving on to our rating of the saga. Very applicably this week, I feel. I've gone with phases of the moon.
Ooh.
So, the worst possible phase that you could be in is a new moon.
Okay.
Because there's no moon
in
a new moon. The next possible phase would be a waxing crescent.
Ooh.
Then we have a first quarter.
That's
my a waxing gibbous. Just like the gibbous that you tried. And finally, the best ranking that you can get, a full moon.
Okay.
Remember, we're ranking the saga.
Yes, so, the saga as a whole. I'm going to say first quarter. Just because of the impact that it had. As a whole, if you think about it, it's fine. It's not going to hurt anyone. It's not great, but whatever, bro. People enjoy it for whatever reason, and let them enjoy it, I guess. I don't know how many people rewatch this.
I don't think many. None of the people that I spoke to were fans going into it or were like big rereaders or rewatchers.
Nah, I see. No, fuck it. I'm going waxing crescent then.
That was mine. Waxing crescent.
No, if there's no rewatchability, then it doesn't deserve a first quarter. So I think, waxing crescent.
I 100% agree. Mine was definitely waxing crescent, mainly, and I'm not even referencing everyone else's rewatchability. For me, there was such good growth in the films, it was improving all the time, and then shitty decisions towards with number 4 and 5 just pushed it way back for me. I would have been comfortable if that improvement had continued throughout. I would have given it at least a first quarter, possibly a waxing gibbous. But unfortunately, it didn't.
Yeah.
They made bad decisions. They got stuck in exposition and silly side stories.
Yeah.
Waxing crescent for this one. I'm not checking it out again.
Yeah. I'm so much. Jody, tell the people where they can find us.
Guys, we did the review for you.
Mm.
Give us your feedback. Do you think we were honest? Do you think that we were objective? Hit us up on Instagram at Bioscope Russell Podcast or via Gmail at bioscoperussell@gmail.com.
That's right. And remember, if you interact with us, you could get a shout out or a dedication. So So I mean, good. I know, and it's quite a prize.
That's a prize. They can famous this.
Yay! But anyway, stay safe, everyone. Safe, Jody.
Safe, right?